All right, we are now back live. Thank you, folks, for joining us today here on the Education Town Hall. This is your humble servant and host, Thomas Byrd. It is indeed an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege to now have in studio with us a mayoral candidate who I believe is an outsider, has a fresh perspective, and I'm anxious to hear what those perspectives are. I'm talking about none other than Andy Shalal, who's joining us in studio. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Andy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. I hope you didn't get in too much traffic out there. I know you were running late. So.
Yeah, I was at a meeting earlier that didn't get out, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
That's here
okay.
I am.
All right. Well, listen, I always start off by asking folks that say they want to be mayor of the District of Columbia. So I'm going to ask you to just give us a brief response with regard to why do you want to be mayor of the District of Columbia?
I've been in the city for many, many years. I've been working and living in the city for over 25 years. It's a city that I love, that I've always loved its character, its people, its history, and all the things that it stands for, being the capital of the United States, having such an impact, really, on so many things, being an incubator for change in so many ways, I think, not only in America here, but throughout the world. I look around and I see the city becoming more and more divided, and more alien, I think, to people that have lived here for so many, so many years. I see a city that has the wealthiest population in the country, at the same time has the highest childhood poverty rate. I see a city that has the most educated population in the country, and at the same time has schools that are rated at the very bottom, having kids that drop out at an extraordinary rate, in some schools up to 62% of them, having an illiteracy rate, functional illiteracy at 50% in some areas and 30% throughout the city, having homelessness continue to grow year after year. These are not acceptable things to have in a city that calls itself a Class A city. I can't sit on the sideline and watch this.
Wow, that's a very good answer. I like that. And so we're going to get into, this is the Education Town Hall, so we always focus on education. So that's what I really want to direct the conversation to now. And I want to ask you to start off by giving me your assessment of mayoral control thus far. That happened back in 2007, instituted by Mayor Fenty at the time. And so we've had a number of years to kind of look back and evaluate and assess that, which hasn't been done in a formal way as the legislation required. But anyway, give me your thoughts about how you think mayoral control has impacted the education system in the district.
You know, I mean, I think the education system in the city needed some shakeup. I think there was a lot of people that were kind of like staying under the radar, and at the cost of children that were not being educated properly. I think the Education Reform Act of 2007 has not really borne the kind of results that I think we were promised, that's for sure. I think that accountability is not as high at this point, certainly not from this, you know, of the mayor or the chancellor, for that matter, toward the citizens. I think there has been a great deal of emphasis. We went from the Bush administration, No Child Left Behind, to the re-administration of No Kid Left Untested, to now, you know, we have this administration where I talk to teachers and it's No Teacher Left Unstressed. And these are not really good things to have in an education system. Education requires openness and freedom, a lack of anxiety and lack of fear. And we've done exactly the opposite to our teachers, our students, and even our parents.
Mm-hmm. And you were probably in transit while Thomas and I were talking before you got here, but one of the things we were talking about is how some of us hoped that even if we opposed the mayoral control of the schools, that it would bring in some kind of shakeup of, like, a new vision for the schools or some kind of, like, result from what was a major stress to the school system, and instead we've seen no vision. And that's why I was really excited. I was at your announcement when you declared that you were running for mayor, and you brought some ideas that I haven't heard before, things about stressing emotional intelligence and really making sure that kids graduate school able to function in a world of human beings instead of, okay, you know, they're going to pass this test. And I wondered if you could say a little bit about that, and also, you know, the related idea that kids would learn how to be citizens of the world and maybe be able to vote by the time they could graduate.
I think we're doing a real disservice to the kids that we're graduating, and I think they are not prepared for life in general. You know, when people talk about jobs in the city, in some areas of town, there are 25% unemployment in this city.
Worse here in Ward 8.
Yeah, exactly. Ward 8 and Ward 7. When people talk about jobs, I always talk about the idea of literacy and preparing people for jobs. There's no shortage of jobs in the city. A lot of people come into the city from outside the city to work,
mm-hmm.
while people that live in the city can't find work. And there's a reason for that. A lot of them are not prepared for the type of jobs that are available, even simple jobs. And I think what needs to happen is we have to really infuse a lot of energy and a lot of effort into upping our literacy in the city, upping the way we teach kids about emotional intelligence, as you mentioned, the idea that these are life skills that they'll take with them wherever they go. Mm-hmm. It's not specific to a job or an avocation. It's life. We fail to teach kids about life. We're too focused on math and science, and oftentimes forget that in order for you to learn math and to learn science, you have to learn how to live. And I think part of it is what I'm proposing is, for one, is maybe lowering the voting age to 17, as I had mentioned. And some people say, that seems kind of hokey. My answer to that is that kids need to be engaged, and kids can get engaged once they feel empowered. And if you can empower kids in the high school year, the last year of high school, turn that into their civics year, it would create an incredible amount of enthusiasm, excitement about school, for one thing, and certainly about their city, their impact on statehood, how they see themselves in the world compared to others, and it gives them this power they can't ever lose after that. I want them to spend the last year of high school at City Hall, at the Wilson Building, talking to the city council members, talking to the mayor and others who make decisions that will impact their life in the future. I want them to spend a lot of time with those people rather than sitting in a classroom, just fiddling their thumbs and, you know, looking at the clock, mm-hmm. waiting for the day to end or the year to end. So I think that's really key for us to engage kids. We can also engage kids in life skills, and I mentioned that before as well, to have an academy, let's say after fifth grade, before kids go into middle school and their wheels come off, really get them to focus on how to live life, how to deal with diversity, how do you deal with kids that are different than you,
mm.
how do you deal with conflict, how do you deal with bullying, peer pressure, all these things that every kid goes through, and sometimes some kids succumb to it. So if you were able to teach them those things at fifth grade, let's say, after fifth grade, you create a six-week academy that starts in the summer. It gets them out of the streets. It gets them to bond with other kids.
Mm-hmm.
It sets them in motion for a future that's much brighter than the one that they see. So I believe that there are ways we could do things to try to realign the schools we have without having to break and start over again. I also don't believe in failing schools. For me, when I hear anybody say, this school has failed, a school is a building.
Right. Mm.
Schools don't fail, communities fail, mm-hmm. leaders fail. And I, as a member of a community, I can't accept failure as an option. That should never be an option. If we see a school is not doing well, it's our moral obligation to make sure that we infuse every possible resource we have, and we have lots of resources, to make sure that that school succeeds, so every kid in that school succeeds as well.
Hmm. You said a lot. So I want to go back to you being the executive. So from your desk as the mayor, how do you impact those things that you just spoke about? I mean, because you can't do everything. You have to run a city. So education is just one sector that you have to be mindful of. But how do you actually have impact and get the those things in place that you just mentioned?
You begin by having a clear vision. I think what's missing for us here is really having a clear vision. A clear vision that says, for instance, for schools, it says, we will not have failing schools. That's just not an option.
But right. Don't you think that others have felt that way, that they don't want failing schools?
No, they actually have said that if a school fails over 2 years, that
they will close it.
They will close it, and who knows what's going to happen after that?
Well, it'll get privatized.
Yeah, or whatever. So that's a very different vision. You also want to have a vision where it says that the reason why we have government is because there are people, they're the customers. They're the people, the end users of government. It's government of the people, by the people, and for the people. This is not a business. Government is not a business. Government is here to serve the public. It's not supposed to serve the high-end developers and the rich folks. It's supposed to serve everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind rich folks. I'm a rich folk. It's okay, but it's not okay to leave people behind.
Right.
For me, it's important to have a leader that can articulate the fact that every single citizen or resident in this city has to be respected, which means that we have to go look and see how we do all of our business. How do we deal with DMV? How do we deal with DCRA? The Office of Tax and Revenue. If people were first, if we said people are first, the Office of Tax and Revenue would never have put in motion processes that took away people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
That would have never happened. To me, that's appalling. The city should write a check to each one of those people and give them their equity back. That's unacceptable to say from now on, we have to go and retro pay these people.
Mm.
It seems terribly unfair that you put somebody in that kind of a situation where you sell off the debt to some shark and have them take advantage of the elderly, the least empowered people in our city. That makes no sense to me.
Well, in that area, and also in the area of privatizing our schools, we face huge, very large moneyed entities that are after our government, you know, Walmart and the Gates Foundation, and you know, also you weren't here for the earlier part, you know, really privatizing schools has become just such an enormous industry. I'm wondering, how do you think the city can move forward without, you know, amidst those pressures? A lot of voices just don't get heard because money speaks.
Well, those pressures cannot stand up to people power. I don't believe that. I think what we haven't harnessed in this city is really people power.
Mm.
A lot of our residents don't feel engaged. They feel disrespected, disenfranchised, and they've checked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because they don't care. It's because they don't see government as being really there for them. So I think if you can harness people power and get them to be more engaged and more, have more accountability, putting the voice back in government, not just in schools, but the people's voice back in government, not just in schools, I think you can really do a lot. Nothing can stand in the way of people power. Money can do it.
Speaking of pressures and the influence of money, the federal government has imposed the No Child Left Behind laws. That's still in effect. And so the prescriptions for failing schools are the ones that have been deployed in the District of Columbia. And there's money associated with doing things the way they want it done. So am I hearing you say that you want to depart from what the federal government is asking you to do under No Child Left Behind and go out and really be innovative in another area and in a different way?
I think you can still get the money and still be able to do much more innovative education. You know, there is national testing, and I think people want some accountability. Mm-hmm. I think the problem we have now is that we've created this very high stakes process that really is rife with cheating, it's rife with anxiety and fear. And I think that's not a good educational environment. For me, we're not teaching. We're just basically taking kids and banging them over the head with just meaningless information sometimes. Kids need to learn, obviously, and parents need to know that their kids are learning, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel that the idea of No Child Left Behind and all of those high stakes barriers have really created an environment that's not very healthy for learning. And therefore, we need to we can still do those without having to go through a process where it's an all or none. It's just how we assess our schools in this city has to be changed, how we determine and how we use tests. We can use tests, but it could be just one element of many things. many of the jurisdictions around us, like Fairfax County and Montgomery County, also adhere to the same pressures, but they haven't succumbed to them in the way that D.C. has. There are ways that you can actually implement some of those procedures, some of those processes, without having to go into a situation where it's creating actually worse education than better education.
Now, there are a lot of folks around town who want to impose a moratorium on the further proliferation of charter schools. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's a good idea. I think it's something we should really consider. I definitely want to put a moratorium on closing schools. I think that's really important. I think closing neighborhood schools is not just about closing buildings, it's about shutting out communities. I want to see parents not having, I want to see parents to have a real choice in their education of their kids. And real choice does not mean that every year I have to go shopping around for a new school for my child. Real choice means that the neighborhood school that is across the street from me or two blocks away is the best school I can go to. And every neighborhood deserves that. So when I hear people saying, oh, we need choice, to me, you're limiting choice when you have to go across town to take your kid. Not everybody has the luxury to be able to put their kid in a car, drag them across town and have them go there. Not everybody has the luxury to be able to go pick up their kid if their kid is sick in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. Those types of conditions are not really conducive to having a tight community or having parents having real choice.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any thoughts on recently the district government released these reports that they called equity reports, and they were entirely about school choice. And this conversation has been hijacked for, you know, really going on 20 years now, where we always talk about parents need a choice and children should, you know, you have to put children first. What we don't talk about, though, is a city vision for how we're actually going to create an equitable society here in the district. And, you know, as you've hinted at, it looks like choice. You know, if you live in Ward 8, you have the choice to send your kid to Ross Elementary School in Georgetown on three buses and, you know, an hour and a half trek. But that isn't equitable. It looks like a choice, but it's really just a desperation move. So, I wonder if you had looked at those reports or if you have any thoughts about how equity and choice get interchangeably used when they're not.
Yeah, I mean, this campaign is all about really talking about the inequality and the imbalance in the way we do things in the city. And yes, you're absolutely right. It is not a choice if I have to take my child across town, like you said, three buses to be able to get there. It's a choice for people that have money, so it's really creating more inequity in a sense. Because if I have money and I have a stay-at-home mom and I have the resources and I can drive my kid across town and pick him up if he's sick in the middle of the day and show up at PTA meetings whenever is necessary and so on, then yes, that sounds like, even that sounds like a shaky proposition, because I think, again, the power of building communities. Some of my kids went through Fairfax County Public Schools and some of them went through DC Public Schools. But going through Fairfax County Public Schools was such an easier approach, and their schools are so much are seen as so much better. You know what high school you're going to go to the minute your kid is born if you're in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a real process, to get your kid from that elementary school, feed them into middle school, and feed them into high school. There's a feeder system that's clear cut for parents. And you didn't have a choice to say, oh, I don't want to send my kid to that high school, I want to send them to another. People were satisfied with the high school they were in, and they had to go there. And the high school became much, much better because all those parents stayed there. They got closer as their kids grew up into the school system. They created a strong community. People looked out for each other, looked out for each other's kids, picked up each other's kids. They had play dates to be able to spend time together and so on. All of these things get lost when you're having to go across town. If you're stuck in the middle of the day and your kid is sick, or if your kid had to stay for an after-school activity and you didn't have time to pick him up in time because you got stuck in traffic, your kid is basically stranded in a neighborhood they're not familiar with. And that's not healthy or even safe for your child. Mm-hmm. You know, I want them near me, and I want my neighbor to go pick them up if necessary. Or he can stay with my neighbor mm-hmm. until I get there.
Andy, we're running out of time, so I would get in trouble with Ron if I didn't ask about vocational ed and your thoughts regarding that. But I also wanted you to talk about how specifically, you mentioned earlier that parents are turned off and tuned out. And so I want to hear your thoughts specifically. You know, how do we bring those people, how do we reengage those parents and get them back participating in the education of their children? But I also want your thoughts on vocational ed so I can satisfy mm-hmm. Ron.
Sure. I think one of the most important things we need to do is have more transparency in the process. Parents see their neighborhood school closing. They have no idea why. They have no idea how it happened. They saw all the parents there testifying, speaking, screaming their eyes out. And then there's nothing. At the end, it's the school gets closed. Nobody knows why. We're told because we're saving money, but really reports have shown that we haven't saved a penny.
No, we haven't.
Yeah. So the fact that we're sold a bill of goods and we get something else makes parents less engaged and less willing to even be participatory in the process. Democracy is complicated. It
yes.
requires a lot of people, and it's not always the most comfortable way to do things. But it's the way we've chosen to do things as a society. We cannot get away from that.
Well, what are your thoughts with regard to vocational ed in schools?
I think it's very, very important. We need to really harness that even more. There are so many opportunities for kids now, with electricians, plumbers, car mechanics, all these things that all of us need at one point or another in our lives. And they're significant jobs that pay a lot of money. Not everybody needs to go to college. Not everybody wants to go to college. Not everybody's equipped to go to college. But everyone needs a job that they could be proud of. And I think there's opportunities there as well.
Now, I want to ask you, with all the money that's been allocated for educating students in this city, there's been an adequacy study that's underway now. I think they are going to come out with a preliminary report very soon. I want to get your thoughts. With what you know about the education apparatus in D.C., do you think there's an adequate amount of funding, or do you think it's inadequate, or do you think it's just right? What are your thoughts around the adequacy of the funding?
It's really hard to know how much money is actually going to each child. I know that there's some reports say about $10,000 per child. There are other reports that say $24,000 per child. So there's a lot of inconsistency in the way we get information, and I haven't been able to figure it out 100%. I know if you go to the website of the school system, you see it's about $10,000 per child, depending on what level they're at. But I don't think it's an issue of lack of resources here in this situation.
Okay.
I really think it's more of an issue of proper allocation, accountability. We have a lot of waste in this system. Mm-hmm. We really do. And I would begin, rather than just throwing money, I would begin by reviewing and auditing the schools and making sure that money is actually going to the child. We also have a very antiquated system in how we allocate money. We allocate money at a certain time of the year, but if things change after that,
right.
that money doesn't move with that child.
Right.
And so it's, you know, charter schools have an advantage in that situation because they're allowed to throw kids out. Right. They don't want them for a myriad of reasons. Regular DCPA schools have to accept them.
Yes.
And without the money. So it adds more challenges.
We're running out of time, literally. We only have about a minute left. But I didn't want to let you go. I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts with regard to Kaia Henderson? How would you assess the job she's done?
You know, it's not about an individual, really. I don't think it's fair to demonize one person. But I am concerned when educators say that we've given up on a certain segment of our schools, like middle schools. I'm concerned when an educator says, we just don't know how to do middle schools. I'm concerned when an educator says we have to funnel our kids into a different direction. These are concerns I think we should address. I don't think it's fair to just demonize a human being.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity. We got a few seconds left. So I want you just to share a closing thought with regard to education. So give us your elevator speech on education. If you become mayor, what is the first thing you do, and how do you want to approach education in the city?
Well, If I was becoming an elevator operator, I'd give you an elevator speech, but I'm not applying for that job. But I do want to tell you that in my administration, the word failure will be taken out of the vocabulary completely.
Okay.
That there's no such thing as a failing school, and there's no such thing as a failing child. If we fail the school, if a school has failed, it means we failed, and that's not acceptable.
All right. That's going to have to be the last word. We'll have to get you back. Maybe next time we'll have to take a longer period of time.
I would be delighted.
Because you have some wonderful ideas, and it's a delight to talk to you. Folks, we've been talking to mayoral candidate Andy Shalaw here on the Education Town Hall. We thank you so much for being here with us today. We apologize for some of the technical issues we experienced earlier and the fact that our earlier guest was unable to make it here today, Mr. Richard Lyman. We hope to have him back in the near future. And we want to make sure that you give out your website before you go.
Sure. It's andy4dc.com. Please visit us. You'll see our education platform there. We'd love to hear from you. There's a space there for you to put your input as well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Andy Shalaw, mayoral candidate for the District of Columbia. Folks, it's been a great week, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. Until next Thursday at 11 a.m. here on the Education Town Hall, this is your humble host, Thomas Bird for Virginia Spats. Peace.
You're listening to WEACT Radio, WPWC, 1480 AM. Visit us online at WEACTRadio.com.
Urine of three-fourths of Americans. They also accumulate